Commission for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. All of our business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this Honorable Court. Please be seated.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Judge Bartley. On my right is Judge Meredith. On my left is Judge Toth. And we're here today for the matter of Rosinski v. Wilkie, docket number 17-3293. The issue before the court is whether Mr. Rosinski is entitled to direct payment of attorney fees for past due benefits under 38 U.S.C. 5904D, associated with the December 2013 grant of an increased disability rating for Mr. Rosinski's client at the time, who was veteran Christopher Grawl. Would counsel for the parties please state your names and your appearances for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
Chris Rosinski, pro se. Nathan Kirshner, representing Secretary Yonner.
Okay.
Capital Washington, representing the Secretary.
Oh, thanks to all of you. Okay. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And each party will have 30 minutes to present their arguments. Mr. Rosinski, do you wish to reserve any time?
Yes, I have reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. Carolyn, please make that happen. Okay. Mr. Rosinski, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. Snyder v. Nicholson, which rejected the Secretary's then and current method for calculating Section 5904 fees, was issued over a decade ago. The Secretary has still not implemented the mandate of that Federal Circuit unanimous decision. And this is not the result of an overburdened system, as the Secretary has stated in his brief. It's because the Secretary has determined only his post-offset method is compelled by the United States Constitution. In other words, the Secretary said the Federal Circuit got it wrong, and he's not going to do it. To prevail on that theory, the Secretary must identify authority for a department head of the United States government to overrule a federal court of appeals decision. He must identify authority for this court not to enforce a superior court's mandate. And then he must convince you that his underlying basis for that conclusion supports that conclusion. I submit that unless he can do all three, the court can stop right there and order him to follow the Federal Circuit's clear, and I quote, clear as that it was used in the Snyder decision, mandate on how to calculate Section 5904 attorney's fees. If the court decides to continue, I submit you'll find that the Secretary's analysis underpinning this theory fails because it is internally inconsistent with Snyder, and also inconsistent with decisions of this court and the United States Supreme Court, as well as raises constitutional issues related with the confiscation of the fees that are the property of the attorney under 5904. First of all, within his analysis in his brief, as pointed out in my brief and reply brief, relies on the rejected definitions of terms to create a straw man situation where he creates the conflicts that he tries to solve by rejecting the Federal Circuit's mandate. For example, fees are not paid out, attorney's fees or 5904 fees, which are both attorneys and paid non-attorney representatives, are not paid out of separate appropriations. They are paid out of the veterans' awarded benefits. There's not a separate appropriation, so that is, again, a straw man position. There were past due benefits in this case, or else what did the Secretary deduct the retired pay from? He doesn't answer that question. But he asserts there were no past due benefits to pay the attorney's fees. But there were certainly something, Federal Circuit called it past due benefits, to pay the federal government. Secondly, the attorney's fees belong to the attorney. That's what I have contended, and I believe that's what numerous decisions of this court, Snyder v. Gober, 14 Vet App 164, and Snyder v. Principi, 15 Vet App 291 among them, specifically say the entitlement is shared, entitlement to, of the benefits paid to a veteran are shared. In this case, 80-20, as in those cases, it's a shared entitlement. The veteran is entitled to the 80%. The attorney is entitled to the 20%.
In this case, the veteran ended up getting over the 50% and ended up receiving the past due benefit. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor. The benefit was used to pay off his retired payment. He had retired because of the medical condition he was ultimately granted by VA, and he had been paid a lump sum. It was not till the next appeal, we had a three-step to sure. get to IU, where it actually, the withholding went to zero. It was in the 2015 final decision where he finally got paid.
Is there still, you've been paid, they paid you a certain amount. Is there still a disputed amount that you believe you haven't received?
Oh, yes, Your Honor, for this one decision, I received nothing. The decision was that I would receive nothing because they withheld the entire retroactive benefit, the past due, some of the past due benefits, and applied that to his debt to the government.
But later you did receive.
Later I received based on the separate past due benefits from a higher rating. They owed him more. It's like a layer cake. He had the original 10%. We're talking about the difference between 10%. And he got a 30% for a 40% total. So we're talking about that box. Later on, I got some for a little bit above that layer. But in the middle, for this decision, this 2014 decision, I was paid $0.00 as in that determination.
So you feel you're owed from 20% of any of retroactive benefits, let's just say, from 2012 to 2014, or December 2013, for his bump up from 0 to 30. Is that
actually it was a bump up from 10 to 40? But yes, from the benefits resulting from this one decision would be the difference from what he was paid from. I believe it was 2010 was the effective date to the January rating, and that's exactly what the Snyder Court said. You take that, whatever the difference was from what he had been paid to what he get on the rating, you sum that up, that is the fund, shall we say, the fund of past due benefits, which the Secretary says didn't exist here, but which he took and put against
but the higher rating was awarded in 2015. Didn't that date back to 2011? Are we not talking about the same period of time here? So if you get 20% of the 50% rating award, isn't it the same period as covered by 20% of the 30% rating that was awarded?
It covers the same period, but they took the money that he had. They did a different calculation. Let's say he owed $50,000 for his total discharge lump sum. The 2014 rating paid about $30,000 of that. So there was still about $20,000 left that he owed the government should he get another award, which he did in 2015. That was another bunch that went to his debt. I was paid just on the part that exceeded his debt on that third decision.
So in 2015, you were awarded fees based on the post-reduction amount?
Still, yes.
But you didn't appeal that?
I didn't appeal that one. That was the previous case here. The point was I'm arguing that I should have been paid, and in principle, the Secretary doesn't pay any. He calculates it wrong regardless of whether I was due. He calculates it incorrectly. So there is post-reduction of that decision. 2014, there was no 2015 decision. That calculation was an error, and that error is directly related to the Secretary's refusal, now what I would classify as an intentional refusal, to calculate the fees the way that the Federal Circuit mandated.
If you'd gotten in 2015 a pre-reduction award of fees, would that have entirely satisfied any obligation to pay you the 20% covering also the 2013?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because there's three separate calculations here. The 10%, I got zero because I wasn't involved in that. Then we got the 30%. That calculation was wrong. The 40, the additional one in 15, that calculation was also wrong, okay? Without the interim calculation, if they went and summed up all the money that he had been paid retroactive minus the 10% and paid that pre-reduction, that would be correct. But I don't have those numbers, and I don't know how what the result would be.
Okay. Can I back us up a minute? I'd like to actually start talking about the fee agreement that led to this dispute. In the language of your fee agreement, it says that the client agrees to pay a fee equal to 20% of the total amount of any funds recovered or award of retroactive benefits paid on the basis of the client's claim. And the attorney agrees that if it is not successful in obtaining any monetary award for the client, then the client shall have no obligation to pay any attorney fees or costs. So I don't think there's any dispute here that the veteran was not paid anything based on the 2013 award. So it seems like your contract itself doesn't contemplate being paid in this situation. So if the board made an error relying on statute or regulation to say there's no cash payment, so you can't be paid, how is it not harmless if the contract itself doesn't contemplate payment in this circumstance?
Well, again, Your Honor, the Secretary is not applying the correct and mandated process to determine the award.
What did your contract contemplate? Did the veteran need to actually get paid in 2013 in order for you to get paid?
No.
Under the terms of your contract?
The determining factor here is the term award and the term benefit. You're
talking about your contract or the statute now?
Well, both. I believe my contract.
Does your contract mimic the language of the statute?
I'm sorry, sir.
Is the way that you drafted that provision in the contract, was it meant to mimic 5904?
Absolutely, and that's the point.
But it uses the words paid, monetary award, funds recovered.
Monetary award is the key. All right. He is technically paid. This is the difference that I have with the Secretary. You can pay an individual by paying off his debt and giving him something else. I think the IRS would consider that being paid. The point is, he was paid under the award. The award itself gave him the past due benefits. That is the key. All right? And that is where I differ with the Secretary. And the Secretary is straightforward. He calculates it after they pay off the debts. Federal Circuit said you calculate it before you pay off the debts. And if the debts were not paid off, he would have been paid what he should have been paid. My contract is correct. The Secretary is abrogating that contract by redefining the terms different than are in 5904. I don't think there's...
The word paid in your contract.
The word award.
But there's both in your contract.
Yes, and he would have been paid the proper award.
It doesn't say would have been paid. It says paid.
My client would have been paid. The Secretary would have paid the correct amount if the Secretary had properly calculated and used the term for award. And I would submit that before you can analyze the terms in my contract, even if ultimately you decide they're incorrect, you have to know what the proper definition of those terms are under the current controlling law. So I'll grant you, if you do that and find Snyder does not award me higher fees, I submit that's the proper way of doing it, and that I will reword my contracts. However, to do that, you must decide what the proper calculation is before you can do that. Further.
Let me go back to the discussion you were having with Judge Meredith on what is at stake here. And then she had a question about if you had been paid 50% back to 2012, I guess it is. If you had been paid 20% of that, that you indicated you would have been satisfied. So as far as the first part of that question, what's at stake here, in your view, is a bump up from 10 to 40% from, I think it was January 2012 to December 2013, 20% of whatever was owed the veteran within that time span.
From the effective date to the date of the award.
Right, which wasn't it January 2012 to December 2013?
I believe so.
Oh, you believe so. Okay. And the amount is, in your view, the bump up from 10% to 40%.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that is still outstanding.
Whatever resulted from the award, whatever it
Right, got it. Okay, now you answered Judge Meredith that you would have been satisfied if you, I forget the end date that we're talking about, whenever they bumped him up so that he was 60%, above 50.
Yes, Your Honor.
He met 50 for the migraines?
Yes, he had migraines.
So you said you would have been satisfied. Under your view, wouldn't your work on the bump up from 10 to 40 still have, required VA payment?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, if I said I would be satisfied, I don't recall that, and I didn't mean that I'm happy with what happened, okay? What I'm arguing about is that the underlying math here is incorrect, and we can postulate what it might be in 2015 if the Secretary had done the right thing in 2014. Secretary didn't do the right thing in 2014, so I don't know what would have happened in 2015. And I do not believe that if you do the math, even the way the Secretary did, that my award later covered and included the fee I would have gotten for the 2013 decision. And I submit again, to determine that, the Secretary needs to do the required math in the required process and then come up with the numbers. If those numbers show that I've gotten all that I would have gotten under the correct fee calculation method, so be it. But I don't believe so.
I guess an easier way to ask the question is, are you entitled to two separate awards of attorney's fees, 20% of past due benefits, for each bump up that you obtained for the veteran?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's exactly correct. When we do the math, if it comes out that there was not any difference in the withholding, then it would be zero. But the point is, again, you cannot determine that until you do it correctly. And that is the point here. The point is not necessarily $40 more. The point is, Secretary is not calculating these fees correctly. And in other cases, mine included, and many, many others, and I did a little informal poll, 5 to 10% of most experienced attorneys' clients involve withholding and this issue. There are significant amounts of money involved, tens of thousands of dollars difference, not a few hundred. So that is the key here.
Could I ask you about something you said in your reply brief? I think this was in response to the Secretary's argument that if they now paid you 20%, it would have paid the veteran 100% of what was owed to him and would be paying an additional 20%, which they say they're not allowed to do. And in reply, you said essentially that if UNL paid the 20%, the government wouldn't be out of pocket because VA could create a debt against the veteran and recoup that 20% from his future benefit payments. So on what basis would VA create a debt against the veteran in that circumstance? Was he paid anything he shouldn't have been?
He was credited with a decreased debt, a credit. And this is going into Gumpenberger space, but yes, the veteran ended up with more benefit than he had contracted for, similar to when the secretary pays 100% to the vet and without disputing that 20% is owed. It's the same line of cases.
Erroneously paying 100%.
Correct, and I'm submitting they're erroneously with not paying, you know, credited the veteran with 100% of the fund versus his 80, my 20. And that whole line of cases, Cox, et cetera, blows that up and says, no, the secretary still has the duty and the requirement to pay the attorney and can go back, but he has to pay the attorney in those situations. Here I submit it's very similar. It's an error, an intentional error perhaps, but they're doing it incorrectly. So that is one theory. The theory that they're relying on is that appropriation is not allowed by the Constitution. Well, the line of cases that where they make an error and pay 100% blows that up, as well as the point it is not a separate appropriation.
Counsel, your time has expired. Carolyn, would you add 5 minutes, please? Thank you.
Let me move on quickly to the overarching issues here. Again, whether it's a few dollars or $10,000, the issue is this. Congress did not implement 5904 to give a windfall to a few veterans who may get their debt paid by their attorney. Congress implemented this, and the Secretary's brief does it well, to encourage attorneys to represent veterans by, one, allowing that to occur to be paid, and secondly, to reduce the risk of being paid. And then a few pages later, the Secretary states explicitly that attorneys must accept the risk of minimal or no payment because of this already rejected process. The Federal Circuit has rejected that. It is not a casino. You can't run a business this way. You can't expect people to go in and do what Congress wants when you don't know if you're going to get paid at the end. It's a simple fact.
I interrupt you there. So 5904 also talks about how an attorney cannot be paid from future benefit payments, and it has to be through the retroactive award. So if your construct is correct that were you to be paid the 20% now, VA would essentially create a debt and then recoup it from the veteran's future payments. Is that not sort of an end around of the provisions that say you can't be paid from future benefits or non-assignability of veterans' benefits?
No, Your Honor. Essentially, there's no difference in that than what's going on now every day legitimately. The veteran may have a $50,000 debt. He gets $25,000 or let's say $20,000 in retro. He still has a $30,000 debt. The Secretary takes it out because that's what statute requires over time. My fee is not coming out at the time.
Not directly.
Well, neither is the debt, but that's what they're doing.
But you're conceding that the government cannot pay the 100% of the benefits to the veteran through, in this case, retirement benefits, plus an additional 20% to you, that it all has to equal 100%, not 120.
Well, the Secretary does not pay my fee. My fee is paid by the veteran. So I believe that the whole construct, which is the basis for their position, is wrong. You can't point to a statute that says the Secretary shall pay out of his own funds the attorney's fees.
But
it is 80-20.
Doesn't In re Smith or one? No, I think it was the 2000 Snyder decision or 2001 talked about it coming out of VA comp and pen. It comes out of the VA comp and pen bowl.
Yes,
or
it
whatever.
Is the VA comp and pen, which also, by the way, is deficiency funded routinely.
Yeah, but you were just saying it doesn't come from the, it doesn't all come out of VA, it comes from the veteran,
money.
But I mean.
Well, yes, Your Honor, and it all comes from the Treasury. But the point is, the award is to the veteran. All the VA is, and there's a description in one of these cases, is essentially the intermediary who delivers it to the attorney with the expressed intent of Congress to reduce the risk to the attorney of having to chase veterans all over the country. That's one of the reasons I personally do 20% when others charge 30 or 40%, because I don't want to be put in the position of having to chase veterans for fees. I'd rather not. Very seriously, rather not. But that is the only function of the VA in this. He doesn't have to be involved. But as I see the current process, which, again, has been explicitly rejected by the Federal Circuit, if the, they would still take the money out of the veteran's benefits and still expect the veteran to pay me the 20% when he didn't even have it. It's all gone to the federal debt, to the back, circles around in the Treasury. That is not what the Federal Circuit said should happen. And we can debate whether that's a benefit, but a reduction, I will submit, a reduction in the debt is a benefit to the veteran. And that is what the Secretary and Congress, the statutes say. But all of the statutes that require offsets say that person who has the debt is to be offset. All of them refer only to the person. And to force an attorney to pay his client's debt is explicitly rejected in Astor. And that is, again, another violation of this, of the Secretary's view that only his method satisfies the Constitution.
Okay, time is ready to expire again. If you have more questions.
I see my time has expired.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wyszynski. Mr. Kirshner, you may proceed.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, the Court should affirm the Board's decision here. Appellant makes a very narrow and specific argument which the Court should reject. Under a very narrow and specific set of circumstances. Here we have a case where the veteran claimant, over approximately a two-year period from I think it was May 2011 until December 2013, was paid a certain amount of military retired pay. That was up until the December 2013 rating decision. And then at that time, he was awarded a 30% increase, an increase from 10% or 0% to 30% for his headaches, but the amount of that increase was still less than or equal to the retired pay he had already received. Under Appellant's argument, he would have the court find that Section 5904D, as he believes it was interpreted by Snyder, creates a separate and distinct entitlement to a standalone entitlement for him for the attorney's fee. The court should reject that argument for two reasons. First, it runs afoul of the statutory preclusion on the duplication of benefits under 5304. And second, it runs afoul of the Appropriations Clause. Now, the court's analysis here, it's got to be kind of narrow, I think, because appellants made some concessions throughout his briefing that I think we can agree on here. Appellant has conceded that there is, in fact, a statutory prohibition on the duplication of benefits. That's at his supplemental brief at 18. He's conceded that the veteran claimant's past due benefits did, in fact, require an offset, and that's at his supplemental brief at page 14, note 3. And then finally, he has conceded that the doctrine of constitutional avoidance is a valid doctrine. So when there's a potential interpretation of a statute that raises a constitutional problem, the court should pick the other possible reasonable interpretation. Here, VA's use of the post-offset payment to determine the attorney fee was correct because the veteran had already received the military retirement pay from the Department of Defense. Therefore, there were no past due benefits at the time of the December 2013 rating decision because those benefits had already been paid on time by the Department of Defense. The board found they were already received by the veteran claimant. An appellant does not contest this. Section 5904 also does not establish a separate appropriation. The plain language of the statute bears that out. Instead, as appellant noted, basically what 5904 does is allow the secretary to act as paymaster and distribute portions of the veteran claimant's benefits to the veteran and the attorney pursuant to a fee agreement. It doesn't create a separate pot of money from which VA can pay those attorney's fees. It all has to be part of the same 100% whole. Appellant's arguments to the contrary here and his request of the invalidity of certain of the secretary's regulations, which actually he said would be binding between him and the veteran claimant in his fee agreement. That's the next page from the fee agreement after the one Judge Meredith cited to. He talks about which regulations are going to control. That would run afoul of the appropriations clause. Under OPM, there can't be a payment unless it's authorized by statute. Here, the veterans claimants' military retired pay were authorized under a statute relating to DOD appropriations, and his VA benefits are authorized under VA's appropriations. So there's really no way for VA to reach that payment that DOD already made. 5904D also clearly says that a payment is to be made out of the past due benefits. And even Snyder, which appellant relies upon, states that the statute limits the fee to the past due benefits awarded. It says any compensation not paid to the claimant in a given month becomes a past due benefit. Here, the veteran claimant was paid. He was paid by DOD. And under, 5304, VA can't duplicate that benefit. So there's simply no way for VA to duplicate any of that 100% that was already paid to appellant. So Snyder really, I don't think, supports appellant's contention. It's a very different case. It involved the non-payment of funds to an incarcerated veteran pursuant to 38 U.S.C. 5313. But unlike Section 5304, which is a prohibition on the duplication of benefits and a prohibition on the duplicate of awards, Section 5313, which was what was at issue in Snyder, is said that a veteran, an incarcerated veteran, could only be paid 10%. It didn't say anything about the award. And that's a very important distinction here. Furthermore, in Snyder, there was no offset. There was that full, I believe in Snyder, was 70% available to the veteran in VA's funds from which the court found the attorney fee could be taken. Here, the award was taken by DOD. There are no VA funds here to reach to give appellant an award. Some of the other cases that appellant cites too, I believe, also are not quite on point. Jackson is not precedential. Ratliff isn't exactly on point either. It involved EJA, and it actually found that there and Social Security statutes and regulations, and there they found the offset was proper. So I don't think there's a problem here.
Could I get you to comment on what we were talking about with Mr. Rosinski? The actual contract in this case uses the word paid, that the attorney essentially will not get paid unless the veteran got paid. How do you read that language, and is that something that we can even address at this point?
Well, first of all, the language in the contract doesn't follow the statute. It doesn't parrot it. It's different. I think it's pretty clear that in the terms of that contract, paid means paid. And I think what's unfortunate here is that it's an unfortunate drafting of a fee agreement if appellant is trying to get paid in this situation. I'm certain that he could find another way to draft a fee agreement which would allow him to get paid in circumstances like this, or perhaps when he's screening clients, he could screen for retired benefits and do a different fee agreement with those veterans. But I think what's important here is the relief that he seeks is for the court to hold that 5904 by itself or as interpreted by Snyder makes a very specific thing happen, but it doesn't do that. So here I think appellant's contract requires payment, and there was no payment. And also 5904 requires an award of past due benefits, and there are no benefits past due because everything was paid timely by DOD. So, Your Honor, I think either way, unfortunately, appellant is without recourse here. He can't get recourse with 5904, and on the contract, I'm not sure that he can get recourse from his client. But again, that's a question of drafting the fee agreement.
Could I also get you to comment on what we were talking about, that if VA were now required to pay the 20% to the attorney, would VA have the authority to create some type of debt against the veteran and then recoup that money from future payments?
No, Your Honor. As you pointed out, there's no part of the fee from a 5904 fee agreement can be taken from future benefits. I don't think there's a difference between creating a debt and then taking that out of future benefits or recouping it from the future benefits directly. It's a distinction without a difference. So
if we applied Snyder to say that you need to pay the 20% now, you would essentially, the veteran would have gotten 100% of what was owed to him through DOD, and then VA would be paying an additional 20% on top of that.
Your Honor, I think it's important that this were you referring to the Federal Circuit Snyder or this Court Snyder, Your Honor?
The Federal Circuit.
Okay. I think it's important here to distinguish again. Snyder didn't involve an offset. This case involves an offset, and there's a bright line between the DOD funds and VA funds. And the only place that the attorney fee can come from under 5904 is benefits due and unpaid. And here, all of the benefits were paid. They were just paid by DOD. And to try to come up with 20% from somewhere else to get that money, 5904 doesn't create that separate appropriation. So it's important to distinguish Snyder because there was no office and here, offset, pardon me, and here there was. And that makes the two cases very different.
So in the issue of whether there was an award of past due benefits in this case, so a lot of the language in the actual board decision seems to suggest that the board concluded that there was an award of past due benefits. They use on page 8 of the board decision, they talk about a benefit award and granting the veteran benefits, referring to that as the past due benefits. If the board decision itself said that there was an award of past due benefits here, is that a factual finding favorable to the appellant? Can we disturb that? Is that a legal conclusion?
Your Honor, I think that this is a muddy area of law, and the terminology isn't always clear. I think the board was attempting to determine what would be considered the past due benefit, and the past due benefit, but for the retired pay, would certainly have been the 30% award between May 2011 and December 2013 that raised the headaches from 0 to 30%. That would have been a past due benefit, but the board also found that there was essentially no past due benefit because the benefit had already been paid. Nothing was past due. The important thing to look at here is past due in the phrase past due benefit, Your Honor.
I'd just like your thoughts on this, looking at a big picture. It seems like an odd outcome if we would accept your arguments that, let's say, in Snyder, where the attorney was representing a veteran incarcerated for conviction of a felony, actually got fees. Fees that the 5904 are meant to encourage. And that here, where the representation was of a disabled military retiree, that thus your interpretation leads to the conclusion that the statute isn't going to encourage that kind of representation in getting the veteran a bump up from a 0 to a 30 or a 30 to a 50. And, that's a significant award for a veteran?
Sure, Your Honor. I think, again, it's really important to go back to Snyder and to look at the fact that in Snyder there was no offset. Snyder involved a restriction on the payment under 5313. If you go to 5313 and read the language, it says essentially regardless of the amount of benefit awarded, the veteran will not be paid, and the word paid is used more than 10%. Here, 5304 says you can't duplicate the benefit, and that's what we would do here. The other important point is that if there had been an offset in Snyder, this same analysis would apply. So if there had been an offset, the recoupment of the attorney in that case would only be entitled to the 20% of that 70% that was over and above the amount already offset. The reduction due to an offset is a very different beast than the reduction in payment under 5313. They're different by statute, and in order, as I was speaking with Judge Meredith about, sort of in order to attempt to recoup any of that money from DOD or provide a separate 20% on top of the 100% of the benefit that had already been paid, that raises constitutional problems. So it shouldn't be done. I think Snyder is definitely distinguishable here based on the lack of an offset in that case and the offset we have here.
Well, regarding your emphasis on the word paid, I mean, I don't know. Do you think that if 5313, is that the felon? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
The 5313 said the veteran doesn't get anything while he or she is incarcerated for committing a felony, that the Snyder analysis would have been different under your analysis. If he hadn't gotten, you know, even been entitled to the 10%, it sounds like you're saying that analysis would have changed in Snyder.
No,
I don't know that that's clear.
No, Your Honor. It's the analysis is different. So I don't think it matters the amount of the reduction in payment in 5313. I think if 5313 had said the payment can be reduced to 20% or 0% or any number, the Federal Circuit probably would have held the same because they found essentially that the benefit there was different than the amount payable to the veteran under the 5313 reduction. Here, it's a question of the actual duplication of the benefit. So, you know, basically, it's like to get military retired pay and VA disability pay at the same time, you get paid twice. And statutes are set up so that you don't duplicate the benefits, and no claimant gets paid twice on the basis of their service. So, and that's in not only 5304, but also the DOD regulation or statutes 10 U.S.C. 1414. They have an interplay between each other. And, of course, there are exceptions once a veteran reaches the level of 50%, mm-hmm. Of course, you're aware. So here I think the real distinction is, you know, whether there is an offset. I think any time, if we were to put this analysis again into the Snyder context, if the incarcerated claimant had been a military retiree who had received military retired pay, that retired pay would still have been offset in a certain specific dollar amount. And then whatever would go to the attorney after that, even after the Federal Circuit's analysis, would still have to come not from everything, but from the post-offset amount, so that you're not having DOD and VA providing the claimant with duplicate benefits.
So you seem to be lessening you started out by saying there are two problems here with appellant's arguments, the word paid and he was never paid, and then the offset circumstance. You seem to be relying solely on offset now.
No, Your Honor. He was never paid by VA. He was paid by DOD, and that's where we get into the Appropriations Clause issue. And it's It's linked to the payment issue as well, because he was never paid by VA either. So both, there is an offset because he was paid by DOD, but then he was also never paid by VA, so there were no benefits due and unpaid, if that makes sense.
In reference to the Federal Circuit Snyder opinion, you mentioned in a footnote in your brief that Snyder partially superseded your regulation on this issue and a general counsel precedent opinion 1293. Has VA done anything since the Federal Circuit Snyder decision issued to amend that regulation or clarify the guidance on when you use the pre-offset, or maybe it's not offset, but...
Yeah, Your Honor, and as I believe appellant noted in his brief, our M21 handbook, states that in situations of incarcerated veterans, like was the case in Snyder, then we don't look at the amount of the cash payment under 14.636H13. Instead, we look to the full amount that would have been granted. So again, kind of taking the 5313 portion out of the equation, and as in Snyder, instead of looking at the 10% of cash payment the incarcerated veteran could receive, we now look to that full award of benefits, the 70% in the Snyder case. So VA has taken action through that to enforce and implement the Snyder decision. If there's nothing further, the Secretary urges affirmance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kirshner. Mr. Brzezinski, you may proceed.
The Secretary's counsel used the right word. This is muddied, and it's muddied because the Secretary interchanges terms and ignores other terms that are not favorable to his position. There's a number of issues I'd like to cover. First of all, the M21 was changed. It now is in two parts. When the award requires a reduction or offset due to incarceration, calculate past due benefits based on the pre-reduction amount. That's Snyder. It didn't used to say that. It used to be on this same list that said when the award requires a reduction or offset, military retired pay, post-reduction amount. Now, one of the other muddy parts here is what's an offset versus a reduction versus whatever. Okay, in Snyder case, the veteran never got his money. He never got that other 80%. There was a case on that, the name escapes me right now, that argued that he should get it when he got out of jail. Nope. This court found that was not the intent of that law. I don't care if you call it a reduction, an offset, a tax. He didn't get the 80%. Why is he treated different, as you said, than the honorably retired veteran who doesn't get the money? And if the Secretary's post-reduction method is the only one that does not offend the Constitution, why does he not do it for incarcerated veterans? Another muddy question. I call your attention to the record. Again, we keep getting told no benefits can be awarded to my veteran because he's getting paid by the DOD. First column in every rating decision, in the record at 1069, total VA benefit. How is he getting any benefits? This is their terminology. It's muddied only because they change it for the purposes of arguing that it wasn't a benefit. I call your attention to 10 U.S.C. 1212, which is the disability severance pay from DOD. The amount of disability severance pay received under this section shall be deducted from any compensation for the same disability to which a former member, the veteran, or his dependents become entitled under any law administered by the Department of Veterans Affairs. I don't know any other way of reading that than the veteran becomes entitled when he gets an award from the VA. So there are two entitlements which this statute tells you how to maneuver, how to blend. I call your attention to In re Smith, which this court found that that entitlement is shared. There's entitlement of the veteran from which 1212 says you can deduct his DOD benefits, and there's 20% from the for the attorney or other paid representative, which I submit is a separate entitlement by the language of this case. That entitlement, I am not the veteran who, of the armed forces who was paid DOD benefits. And also, the DOD benefits are just that. They're awarded on the basis of the DOD criteria, on the basis of some service criteria. It is not, as required explicitly, any past benefits awarded on the basis of the claim before the VA. That is what the deduction or the fee methodology is supposed to consider, only consider. The DOD benefits are not the result of this claim. It's a separate issue. It only relates to the veteran's entitlement. Further, let's talk about the public policy aspects of what the Secretary is proposing. First of all, again, he has decided that Snyder does not is wrong, that it compels him to violate the Constitution if he applies it as written. And Snyder says there is no mud here. It's a clear answer. The statutes provide a clear answer. The mud is stirred up by not applying Snyder. And I implore you that this is the key here. You cannot do any of these analyses without determining which analysis you must do. Snyder is not limited to its facts. We know that because a few years later, Jackson came out and applied Snyder to a non-incarceration case. Completely different. Somebody died, and they referred to Snyder as determining the rights and how you calculated the fee for that attorney. If it only applied to incarceration, not offsets, whatever you want to call it, deductions, they would have said so. They didn't even raise that to a published opinion. It was so simple to the Federal Circuit. And I would ask you to back up. As Judge Bartley pointed out, the result of this is that incarcerated veterans can attract and pay their attorneys in full, guaranteed. Even the Secretary concedes that. Honorably discharged, retired veterans, or veterans injured on active duty cannot. And that is exactly the situation that the court in Astru and Justice Sotomayor addressed in her concurrence. And I want to quote this because I think it's very powerful. It is common sense that increasing the risk that an attorney will not receive a fee award will inevitably decrease the willingness of attorneys to undertake representation in these kinds of cases. Indeed, that's what the Secretary's answer is, both here and in writing. Just don't take them. Okay. Justice Sotomayor is a justice for a reason. I quote, if the government is instead suggesting that a lawyer can simply decline to represent a prospective client once she knows of a client's debtor status, that suggestion only proves my point. There is no reasonable interpretation of congressional intent and these statutes which makes this a casino for lawyers who try to represent the most honorable veterans that we have, those who spent their entire lives and suffered active duty disabilities. That alone requires, I suggest, a deep review of Snyder, because Snyder is not limited to incarcerated. There's nothing in there that says so, and Jackson proves that it is not. DOD benefits were paid for one reason, VA benefits are paid for another reason. VA attorneys and VA representatives seek the benefit for VA, and they are paid to obtain the benefits from VA. What happens any more than what happens in tax status, what the IRS takes from the veteran, what the mortgage company takes from the veteran, should have no more impact on the paid attorneys or the paid representative's fee than anything else. I submit it cannot be that only the misbehaviors, only the bad actors get the benefit that Congress intended. Remember, it wasn't so long ago that there was only $10 for attorneys, max. Congress said, come on in after NOD. Congress said, we think it's working so well, come on in after notice of disagreement, or after the board decision was first, then a notice of disagreement. And theoretically, in a few weeks, it's going to be as soon as you're denied by the regional office. This is the exact opposite of what Congress has proven it believes the benefits are to all veterans. And Judge Toth, I listened to some oral arguments where you were asking about whether it's the single veteran or veterans as a whole that should be addressed in when you analyze under Gardner and other things, what is the benefit? I submit that you will very rarely find a veteran who will say, yeah, I'll take a few more $100. I don't care what everybody else gets an attorney, or I don't care how much they get in their benefit. When I was representing the laptop case, we had an incredibly small response to our class action. And we interviewed and found out it was because they didn't want the $150. They'd rather have it go to the Fisher House at the Naval Bethesda Medical Center.
Mr. Rosinski, your time has expired.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rosinski and Mr. Kirshner and Ms. Washington, for your arguments. The case is submitted for consideration, and the court is adjourned, and the court will now come down and greet counsel.
All right.